The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Are you thinking about getting into Dungeons & Dragons? Maybe you're looking to expand your horizons as a DM or a player. If that's the case, then it's time for you to check out The Dungeon Cast, the best D&D podcast out there that helps you passively learn all about the game just by listening. Join co-hosts Will and Brian as they break down the lore of a rich multiverse 50 years in the making in a lighthearted and beginner-friendly way. They cover everything from character creation options to tips for dungeon masters. There's something for everyone, no matter how long you've been playing TTRPGs. Find The Dungeon Cast anywhere you get podcasts or on YouTube.
Beyond and hello, everyone. My name is Jonathan Dornbush, and this is Podcast Beyond, IGN's weekly PlayStation show where we catch you up on all of the news that broke in that very funny space in between when we last recorded and when we published the show, because, of course, that's when PlayStation Plus games get announced. But we'll have a lot more to talk about in addition to the PlayStation Plus games, including a brand new game that launched for PS5 exclusively. Among all that, there's a ton of PlayStation and third-party news that we're going to get to. So without further ado, I will introduce my cast. I'm joined this week by Brian Altano.
Hey, what's up?
Hey, Brian. We're also joined this week by Max Scoville.
Hello, everybody.
Hello. And also joining us this week is Laura Kate Dale. Laura, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much for having me.
We're very excited to have you on. We have a ton to talk about this week. Of course, I did want to, at the top of the show, point people to, if they perhaps don't know you or don't know where they can find your work, you're on YouTube at Laura K. Buzz, correct? Do you have the, is that the...
Yep, Laura K. Buzz, yep. I do weekly videos about accessibility in video games. I do Twitch streaming 3 nights a week, and... The big thing that the reason I'm here today is because I convinced Max and Brian to do a very, very silly thing a couple of years ago. On Thursday of this week, I have a book called Things I Learned from Mario's Butt coming out, where I convinced both Max and Brian to contribute reviews of butts. And we did lots of art. It's just a big art book full of butt reviews of video game characters. That's a physical thing you can go buy.
You really had to twist our arms on this one. This was like definitely outside of our comfort zone. Yeah. I didn't, you know, like writing about a video game character's butt, incredibly difficult for me. I consider myself one of the more serious journalists in the field. And this was definitely tough, but I'm honored to be part of your book.
This is the first time I think I've heard you say the word butt, Brian. So yeah.
I thought you were going to say journalist.
No, don't worry. There's, you know, Twitter arguments we can get into about that. But no,
Can we tease what we wrote about?
Oh yeah, please do. Yep. Okay. You've wrote some wonderful things.
Yes, I wrote about Bloodborne through the perspective of somebody trying not to poop their pants out of fear.
There's a whole chapter about Bloodborne though, which I love. Like, there's just
the Bloodborne bit that Brian did is one of my favorite bits because it's entirely written in very fancy prose, and sometimes I'll just open the book and just fancily read it out in a highfalutin voice because it's a wonderful bit of writing.
Max, what did you contribute?
I talked about the snake family of bottoms. Specifically, you know, the whole big boss and the liquid snakes and the naked snakes and the punished snakes, really just how they're all that pair of cheeks really changes over the course of various generations of PlayStation. So there's a lot to go on there. I want to give a shout out to the art in here, which is amazing. There's honestly an entire chapter about just Metal Gear butts.
A wonderful artist, Zach Flavin, did some spectacular work on this book.
That's fantastic.
Gotta have Bryden.
Of course. I absolutely love the idea of it. I'm so happy Brian and Max were able to contribute. And thank you for being on the show this week. In addition, of course, to having the book out. You said it's out this Thursday?
Yep, it's out on Thursday.
And people can find it at any retailer you want to shout out? Or
all of the book places you should be able to find it.
Perfect.
Google the name of it, you'll find it.
And what a, honestly, what a fantastic name it is. I think if the name doesn't sell you alone, I don't know what books you do want to read, because I absolutely adore it.
And if not, you're probably going to find some other fun stuff with that Google search too. So like true. Either way, yeah. there's entertainment awaits.
Yeah, probably safe search off if you don't care. But if
roll the dice. You know. Everyone's working from home. Nothing is safe for work. Just go for it. You know?
That's very true. Well, in addition to talking about whatever our search histories may be and how they led us to video game, but we do, of course, have a ton of game news to talk about this week. But in addition to butts, I did want to talk, I guess, about another horny video game topic that's currently dominating the industry right now. And thank you to Laura for shouting this out before we started recording. But to follow up last week's episode, where, of course, we talked all about the Resident Evil Village gameplay, the very spooky and incredible Maiden demo that's on PS5, finally, we got an answer to, I think, what everyone has had top of mind for Resident Evil Village. And, of course, that is the tall vampire lady, a.k.a. Lady Dimitrescu. I don't know how to pronounce her name. I apologize. Her height. And it is, according to the art director, I believe, yes, the art director addressed the height in a statement on Twitter and specifically mentioned that she is 2.9 meters or 9 feet and 6 inches tall, including hat and heels.
Well, I mean, who wouldn't include the hat and heels? That's now, part of the whole thing.
It, like, without the heels, what's the point of everyone wanting her to step on them? I don't really... You know.
I think it's unfair that she includes a hat and heels. That's like when like rich people get stimulus checks. Like she's there's enough going on up there. You know, what is she 9'4"
with the hat and
heels? 9'3".
I would say she's a brave woman to be wearing those heels and that hat in a place with that many stairs and chandeliers. Like that is a lot of stuff to hit your hat or your ankles on. That's just a mess in that castle.
Mm-hmm. I'll concede to Brian that the hat probably shouldn't be counted, but you have to count the shoes because no one wants the tall lady's height without the big tall shoes on.
That is true.
Yeah,
but don't you think I'm with you. I'm with you both. I think that like going in a house like that, but also to me the hat, it's like she has to dip into every doorway, and that's potential of knocking that off. And it's also like, do we have any theories about what she's going to look like halfway through this game when she's like a, you know, 200-foot tall grotesque tentacle monster with glowing red orbs?
I was going to say at least 6 other arms, probably somewhere.
I'm pretty sure if you add like extra arms and tentacles, you're just going to increase the number of people who are horny about her.
Yeah. What if she just gets like really tiny, which is like the opposite of what every Resident Evil character does when they mutate?
I think that's pretty scary.
Yeah,
that's creepy. Just runs up your pant leg. You
just becomes like 9 inches tall.
Yeah, that's creepy.
It's just the Hobbit perspective thing, basically. She's just in a different part of the room from you. This coming out as like, it is a Twitter statement for those who didn't see it. It's a statement on like an image, sort of like all the cyberpunk delay images, obviously not yellow background with black text. But it's just so funny that like, you know, in a year where video games have been delayed and massive, like, crunch stories have been detailed and, you know, allegations addressed via comments like that, we also got a very serious presentation about how tall she is. And I really wish I could have been in the meetings between, like, the social media team of Capcom, the Village development team, like, how they decided this was where they ended up.
I watched an hour-long documentary on them telling that team what's going on with that, like what that response was. People are like, this is going to be a great horror game. And everyone's like, well, everyone's very aroused by the large vampire woman. Like,
all I can imagine is some shy intern having to come into a boardroom full of very important people and be like, I'm really sorry to have to explain this. The internet just can't stop.
Like, I don't know if the purpose of that press release was to be like, we know that you're horny, stop it, or we know that you're horny, please continue to be more horny, or stay at the exact horniness where you are right now.
They wouldn't have told you their height if they weren't trying to make more horny.
Yeah, no, they definitely weren't trying to like unhorny everyone.
to dehornify the audience. Yeah, I think there is, it's a little bit of a like a chicken and an egg scenario. Like, I don't know if they knew how aroused the internet would become by this character, or if they're like trying to play catch up. It feels like it's a little bit more of like, oh, they didn't expect this volume of excitement around her, and now they're trying to lean into it a little bit, is what that statement led me to believe, but
was it with Metal Gear Solid 5 where Kojima put out like quiets measurements and it was like, oh yes, it's for cosplayers. Here is some high res. And it was just like, but in this case, it's like, great news to all you 9'6" ladies out there. good luck with that. I don't know. It's such a weird little wink and a nod.
Yeah. It's just a great, to me, it's just such a wonderful thing. One, that they're playing into it, but two, like last week we spent so long talking about how like evocative and moody and scary the Village Maiden demo was and what we're most looking forward to about like the way it's mixing the old and the new and kind of how it's having its cake and eating it too when it comes to like both being scary but also self-aware. And I like that we're sort of seeing that hand in hand where like the demo last week scared the hell out of us and now we're really fixated on how tall the vampire lady is so we can talk about that more. It's just a delightful sort of like back and forth with this game. And honestly, I hope it continues in the months to come before it launches, because this feels like only the beginning of the heights that we can discover in game. But of course, I do want to jump to a PlayStation specific topic that popped up just today as we're recording. PlayStation released its 2020 version of its PlayStation wrap up, which if you've used Spotify Wrapped or anything like that, it basically tells you your PlayStation stats for the last year of gaming. The 2020 version does consider some PS5 stats in it, but it will generally tell you things like how many hours you've played, your top games, the day of the week that you ended up playing the most on average, which to me was one of the more like interesting, peculiar stats. I wish there were more weird ones like that we can get into. And then it also, of course, told you your trophy breakdown, your PS5 hours played, if you were able to get a PS5, and the trophies and, you know, most played game there. So I figured we could all sort of go around, mention our top three most played, and then we can sort of get into some of the weirdness that we've noticed with this. But I will mention mine off the bat. And honestly, I was a little surprised at what the top three ended up being. Number one, not a huge surprise to me, was Fortnite. I know it comes up periodically on the show, but my girlfriend and I play Fortnite every few nights together, if not, you know, most nights during the week. It's just a fun way for us to like split screen, wind down, and I get to be, you know, like Groot while she's running around as Captain Marvel, and we're, you know, shooting at Aquaman for some reason. It's just it's been a really fun way to like wind down from every day. But yeah,
did James Gunn have this with Groot where he had to like tell everyone how tall Groot was because people were worried?
I don't think so. I'm trying to remember back. I did follow the Guardians PR cycle. No, there wasn't. It wasn't horniness for Groot. I feel like there were other aliens in that movie people were horny for.
I don't want to say that nobody wants to have sex with Groot, but I would say substantially less people want to have sex with Groot than the vampire woman.
True.
Why do you think that is? Because Groot doesn't have a hat?
I think it might be the hat.
I think they just don't want splinters. I think that's it.
That's it. The feel of tree bark, like caressing tree bark, is just not kind of what I would want out of a relationship. But anyway, after that was Ghost of Tsushima. And then third, interestingly, and I forgot I had spent so long replaying it because this was before we were all stuck at home. But I had played Horizon Zero Dawn when we were going to be taking a look back at PS4 games, and then the year happened. But yeah, that was actually my number three game as I went to Platinum Horizon. So an interesting, definitely PlayStation heavy top three for me. But Laura, I'll start with you. What were your top three most played games?
So my most played game this year was Persona 5 Royale, which largely just means I replayed a game that I liked from a few years ago.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where I love the new content that is in Persona 5 Royale, and it continues to be just an incredibly stylish, over-the-top, really wonderful RPG. I just wish there was a way for me to like upload my save and go, hey, here's what I did in the first playthrough. Can you just like speed me along a bit to the new content? Because the new content was wonderful. There was a lot of time where I was enjoying that replay. There were other bits of it where I was like, I don't need to do the school tests again. I don't need to do all of that again. I know what I'm doing here. I have some issues still with Persona 5 Royale. One of them in particular is like they tried to fix the whole weird LGBT phobic scene that comes up at one point, and they kind of made it just bad in a different way. But like, I still love that game. It's great.
I haven't gotten to that scene yet. I'm still pretty early on in my Royale playthrough, but yeah.
No, I'm really excited for Persona 5 Strikers, which is soon as well. So just give me more of Persona 5.
Yeah.
After that, it was 70 hours on Fall Guys, which I never get that into online games. I think there was something about the fact that it was... It's the thing that grabbed me for a while with Fortnite, where because most people in a game are going to lose, I don't feel bad about losing, and that really gets me into just playing again and again and again and again. It became my switch off at the end of a workday game for a good few weeks, and just... Yeah, it is the most I've been into an online game in quite a long time. And then the third one on the list is I put 60 hours into Ghost of Tsushima, which is a gorgeous, gorgeous, wonderful, wonderful game that I really want to go back and do more of the side content that I didn't get around to doing, because it's just really delightful to be in that world. Particularly this year, it has been really nice to just have such a fully fleshed out place to explore in games, and that has been... It's one of my favorite things I played all year.
It was nice to, like, wear a mask, not because you had to.
Yeah.
Because you could just do it while you're riding around on a horse in just beautiful landscapes. Yeah, mm-hmm. it was a great
from
one.
Inhaling cherry blossoms because they're just blowing every which way.
Exactly. Max, what about you?
So third place was Cyberpunk with 59 hours. And then second place was Bloodborne with 71 hours. And then first place was my wife playing Spelunky 2 on my account with 80 hours, which is a little bit frustrating on a personal level, but it's also phenomenal ammunition for when she's like, "You're playing too much Hitman, hang out with me." 'Cause I can just be like, "You, how dare you?" But there is that wonkiness with like, with stuff not showing up, because like we talked about how much Call of Duty I was playing weirdly out of character, but it says I was only playing online for 6 hours, and I'm wondering if it's counting. I think I set myself to appear offline because we got some like some early review games. Sometimes that's an embargo thing, and I haven't really I don't think I've changed it back.
Is it something privacy settings wise because we are in that we do game stuff? Because I had a similar issue where it says I've only played 27 hours of online games, but 70 hours of Fall Guys.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I had the same problem with Fortnite, which was my number one game, but I only spent 18 hours somehow online. So yeah, actually, as soon as you said the privacy thing, Max, that probably is the most likely.
It would explain a lot.
Yeah, because otherwise there's some weird math going on behind the scenes, but they're the ones with the data, so I assume they're pulling it in some way.
I wish it gave you like a full breakdown of everything you played, because it said I played something like 150 games or something. Like I definitely jumped around a lot, but
same.
I am curious. I do love that's one feature I do love about the PS5 is that you can see how many hours you sunk into a particular game, and in some cases it's straight up wrong, but it's a nice ballpark figure.
Yeah, it's a weird one where, like as you were saying, I think my top three games account for a total of 250 hours, but it says I spent 2,300 hours playing games in 2020. So what were all those other hours? I would love to be able to get some more stats on that. But Brian, what about yours?
It's kind of embarrassing. 106 hours in Ghost of Tsushima. That's a lot. That's a couple of days. That's like close. That's what is that? Four and a half days.
Four days,
that's a lot. I got the plat. I think I almost got the platinum there. No, I did maybe. 96 hours in Bloodborne, which I did all that before the pandemic hit, which is just I really ate my food too fast on that one. I feel like I could have saved that throughout the year and experienced the serotonin I got from platinuming that game later on when I needed it more.
Did you platinum that this year, or was that?
That was, I mean, last year.
I mean, this year. When I say this year, I mean
2020.
In the after times or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I platinumed that in 2020 in like February. And then in March, it was like, you don't have anywhere to go anymore. Play some video games. But yeah, 96 hours in Bloodborne, 4 hours online, and 2 hours were Bloodborne. And so I think that was just 2 hours of me like waiting for like some guy to summon and show up and help me. and then 63 hours in Cyberpunk, a game that like I would honestly give like a 6 out of 10, but I just didn't have anything else going on over holiday break. And I was just home. I wasn't traveling to go see family or anything. I was just kind of sitting around and just like drinking beer and playing Cyberpunk. And I'm like, what am I even doing? I didn't even finish that game. I got to the like literally probably 10 feet from the end of that game and then just dropped it and played other stuff. So that's fun.
I just checked. I have 25 hours logged in Call of Duty or on Activision or whatever. So that's, I don't know. I'm curious what else is like just not showing up there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I gotta believe that the thing you were saying about appearing offline has to be the trick there, because fact that that seems to be affecting all of us feels like that's pretty reasonable. I'll check in with some people who probably didn't go privacy offline as much and see if we can get them.
When Dorno, you said Sunday night was your
Sunday evenings were my most played.
Same for me as well. Yeah, apparently Sunday nights are key gaming time.
Yeah, it was Sunday morning for me. That's my
I was
church.
Sunday afternoon, so really we're just doing this Sunday. Yeah, I wouldn't have thought so.
I think it for me at least, it's like Saturdays are usually the day that I like, as much as it's the relaxing day, it's also the day that I'm probably like hopping around doing a bunch of different things, like either around the house, like doing some chores, and then maybe I'll play a game for an hour and then I'll, you know, play with my dog for a little bit and just bouncing around. Whereas Sunday is like, oh no, the weekend's over, I need to relax. And so I just play a game to tell myself to have fun. Overall, I love when they do this, but yeah, I totally wish we could find ways to get deeper into the stats. Like I always find it really interesting when, you know, after a game's been out for like a month, they'll be like, there were 700 million foxes pet in Ghost of Tsushima in the first 3 weeks. I kind of wanted weird stats like that from my game time. Like, obviously they wouldn't have that for every game, but the gaming by the numbers sort of serotonin hit, I guess, like it's just such an interesting thing to be able to look back and be like, oh yeah, I enjoyed all of those little experiences here and there. It's a cool thing that I think, I don't know if Xbox does it. I know Nintendo did it at the end of 2020, but I think it was a little more generalized. Do you remember it, Brian, at all? Am I going crazy? I think they did it.
No. I think they I don't know if it was this specific, like you played a lot on Sunday mornings or anything, but they did send out emails being like, here's a breakdown of the number of games you played, number of hours. And I think one thing they did was, they tracked year over year, which was interesting. And so that was, a lot of people were like, oh boy, I went up a lot in 2020. Like, I think like it was also like Animal Crossing hit. And I think a lot of people just dropped like 200 hours into that game. Easy. I know I did. But yeah, I think what was interesting about this was like the thing ends with them being like, congrats on getting a PS5, by the way, you joined like the exclusive club. And it was a weird thing to like thank me for. It's like, you're the ones that made that hard for people to do. but then they're like, here's a free theme for your PS4, that system you don't use anymore. So I wish there was a way I could gift that to somebody. I think it just automatically gets unlocked on your account. But if you can walk my old man ass through that process and you want it, it's yours, because I don't need it.
It's also, I'm clicking it right now just out of curiosity. It does come with a code, so I think you could share it, but it is technically a... Oh no, yeah. So it's just a wrap up dynamic theme. I think you can share it. I think it's not like your personalized wrap up theme. That would be a little weird. But
that saves me having to like boot up my PS4 just to put the theme on, just to not use it again.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I'm seeing a thing here where, speaking of Fall Guys, Laura, you were mentioning just for the online offline thing. It says that was my top online PS Plus game, and it's more hours played doing that than I was online. So yeah, a weird thing going on there. Max, what were you going to say?
I wonder if they're going to, like, because they've done this for 2 years in a row now, and then there's the fact that on PS5 you can see exactly how many hours you have logged, you know, give or take. I wonder if they're going to roll this into like a full-time dedicated app, because like you see this with, I mean, again, I pulled it up on the Call of Duty, Activision, whatever, and that has like super detailed statistics on all the stuff you do on there. And I feel like people really love that. And it's also the sort of thing where people, you know, boast about it or tweet it out. And it's, they also went ahead and they, you know, sort of reformatted all the trophies. So I don't, it seems like they're maybe gearing up for that.
I like when consoles make it easy to see how long I've been playing a game, even if you do it in the most basic of senses, like the Switch, where I can go and see that I've played so much Pokemon Sword and Shield that I broke the timer and it won't count up anymore.
It's like popping a really big zit where you're like, that's disgusting. I'm ashamed of myself, but also a little bit proud, you know?
Yeah. Gotcha.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I like when publishers release like hyper specific statistics. Like I believe Ghost of Tsushima, like early on, they were like, you've pet 10 million foxes this week. Like stuff like that is like really interesting to me.
Yeah, a lot of especially the multiplayer games end up doing that. But yeah, whenever I see that stuff from first party Sony games, I'm always like, oh yeah, I want to know that more. I wish I could know like my specific number contributed. And I obviously they are collecting all this data. I don't know how much use they feel they get out of it by telling us this, but I love it as just a way to know how you've been engaging with games over the last year, for better and worse sometimes. But it's a really fun, neat thing, and I'm glad they're continuing to do it. And Max, as you were saying, I hope they find a way to like integrate it into an app like the PS app that they've revised. I hope they find ways to make it a little bit more centralized to the experience. But yeah, a cool thing that they were able to do. And definitely in the comments of this video, please, everyone, let us know your most played games. I'm very curious to see the results of the Beyond audience and see sort of where things fell for our audience this year. But anyway, moving on. Go ahead.
I was going to say, it's also worth mentioning that they did also do like a general year in review wrap up that covers just all of like PlayStation stats, yes, such as like the number of like the most popular games that were played just as a whole. So dig into that, too, because there's some really cool stuff in there.
And there is, speaking of, I got this email from, it was more my like personal account just tied to my PSN, but they sent out a funny email that was both, it was a 2020 review and then a 2021 look ahead. And it's like all the big games coming this year. And it's like really beautifully designed splash pages and all this, like, look at all these amazing games we have coming to PS4 and PS5. And then at the very bottom, it's just like the God of War sequels in development. And it's like, please leave us alone for a little while. We're trying to make the damn game. It's coming. We just hold on.
This episode of Podcast Beyond is brought to you by NordVPN, a great way to protect yourself online while also improving your overall experience while enjoying cyberspace. Are you tired of streaming shows, movies, or sporting events being unavailable in your region due to draconian restrictions that are based on completely arbitrary geographical boundaries in physical meat space? Well, switch your virtual location to a place where that's no longer an issue. The same goes for shopping. You can get the best possible deal on subscriptions, flights, hotels, and other goods and services like that from websites that like to play favorites with certain territories and currencies. Meanwhile, encrypted traffic protects your data from hackers, viruses, malware, phishing sites, and other harmful hitchhikers of the information superhighway. Though really, it's more of an information autobahn because there is no speed limit with NordVPN. It is the fastest VPN in the world, so there won't be any buffering or lagging, and it'll stop your ISP from throttling your bandwidth. Isn't that nice? One NordVPN account can be used across 6 devices, which is great. My wife has been using our account to watch all sorts of awful British reality TV shows that aren't available here, like Argument Island or Half Naked Idiots Fall in Love, and everyone's favorite, The Worst People Just Got Married. Let's hear them talk about it. Shows that are so bad they're blocked in our part of the world for our own good, but luckily NordVPN allows her to trick the internet into thinking she's in the UK, so she and her awful friends can shriek and howl and cackle at the TV while I'm trying to relax. I've been using my VPN too. You know what I've been using it for? None of your business. Yep, that's right. And thanks to NordVPN, my data is safely encrypted, all bundled up in a weighted security blanket of incomprehensibly complex math problems, and nobody can tell what it's doing under there. Data, you do your thing. I'll leave you alone. 1 month of NordVPN coverage costs less than a cup of coffee. Coffee can't protect you from cybercriminals unless you throw it at them or pour it on their computers, and you'll probably get in trouble for doing that. So get NordVPN instead. To get the best possible discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/pobeyond. That link will also give you 4 extra months on the 2-year plan. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. Again, that is nordvpn.com/pobeyond. And now, back to the show.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for 2 women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it. Or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz and how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.
But while we wait for any other news about that sequel, there are new games and new PlayStation Plus games that we can talk about as they were revealed last week, but they're available now as we're talking. So if you don't have PlayStation Plus, I personally think it's one of the better months in a while, but you're able to get Concrete Genie, which is on PS4 and backward compatible on PS5. You can get the Control Ultimate Edition on both PS4 and PS5. And the Ultimate Edition on PS5 takes more graphical advantage of the system. And then, of course, Destruction All-Stars is debuting on PlayStation Plus on PS5. It was originally scheduled for launch of the PS5, got delayed, but with that delay, it came the PS Plus launch, and it's also, I believe it's going to be on there for 2 months. So you have some time if you're obviously still looking for a PS5. I do want to say to people, though, regardless of whether or not you have a PS5, redeem every game you can on PS Plus, because whether or not you own the system, you can still redeem them. So don't let not having a PS5 yet stop you from redeeming the PS5 games on the list. Cannot recommend that enough, because I saw some people who got a PS5 in the beginning of the year and were like, oh, I forgot to redeem Bugsnax, so I guess I'll just go buy it. But like, you can redeem all these games if you only have a PS4.
And when you go to a store and you go in the bathroom and they have paper towels, those are free. You can help take yourself. Them all. Get a bunch of them. Never buy paper towels.
Become a mummy. Just dress up like a mummy everywhere you go. Just be a street mummy for free.
Street Mummy feels like a really bad 90s movie.
It's the sequel to Concrete Genie. It's going to be huge.
It's actually coming to PlayStation Plus next month.
I'll believe it. We'll see what we'll make our predictions in just a few more weeks. But no, I do want to talk about this lineup, and I do want to get to Destruction All-Stars of it all. But Laura, you had told me before the show you're playing a little bit of Control Ultimate Edition, correct?
Yeah. I put maybe 4 or 5 hours into it, so I've not played like the whole thing back through again. But it's been nice to have an excuse to go back into Control. This is another one of those games on PS5 that has the options of visually, how do you want it to look? Do you want to have it with ray tracing and all the fancy visual effects, or do you want it on 60 frames a second? And every time a game on PS5 offers me this, I try and do it with the fancy graphics mode, and I play that for a while, and then I swap it to 60 frames a second, and I never want to go back, and that continues to be true for Control. I'm really digging some of the stuff they're doing with the DualSense controller on this game. A lot of it is the expected stuff that all the games are doing, but it's still really cool, and I've not gotten over it yet. When you're running around, you can feel the footsteps in your controller, and they feel slightly different when you walk on different materials, that sort of thing that they did in Astrobot. Your gun does the clicking with the trigger when you pull it. It's none of it's particularly surprising use of the DualSense, but it all feels very nice, and that's all I really need from it. The vibration feels really, really nice when you're doing melee attacks to blast people through walls. Otherwise, it's just Control still. It's still a good game.
Now, Laura, did you play it on PS4 initially?
I originally played it on PS4, yes.
Did the save file carry over, or did you have to start fresh in the PS5 version?
I believe you can carry the save over. I didn't bother to carry the save over because I was like, I'm just going to jump in from the beginning and replay it.
I will double check.
Yeah, I believe it carries over. Cool. I think there was a press release had about it.
You just sold me on this free game that I should just probably download anyway. But yeah, like I didn't mess with, and it's got all the DLC and everything, right? Like the.
Yep, it's got all the DLC on it. Let me find. I've got my email, which will tell me.
That'll probably be better than me looking at tweets. Oh, yeah,
it just said in the trailer we're rolling all expansions. I should probably, know that too. So, EGM gave it a 5 out of 5. Wild.
Oh, EGM. Well, we gave it Game of the Year. Apparently, saves do not transfer over, unfortunately.
I thought they did. My apologies.
No, all good. All good. I'm looking at this is from Thomas Puha from the Riot team. The Remedy team. His name is Riot on Twitter, so it confused my brain. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, I build in this game kind of early, but I want to give it another shot. I'm just not sure where to do that, because I have a Series X and I have a PS5, and this is one of those, like, I'm not sure, do I want to go with... Like, I think that, like, the game doesn't have HDR, or it's, like, it's got some, like, sort of faux HDR thing going on, and I have a nice TV, I want to take advantage of it. But also, like, I'm really interested in the DualSense stuff it's doing, even if it's subtle. So yeah, that's just constantly that, you know, where do I go to play this game?
I mean, the game is literally called Control. It would be kind of a missed opportunity if they didn't do something with the controller.
Seriously. Yeah.
I had a look. If you're playing it in PS4 backwards compatibility mode, then Ultimate Edition does support moving your save over, but you can't do it if you're playing the PS5 version.
Gotcha. There it is. So yeah, because with the PS Plus, you technically can redeem both the PS4 and PS5 versions. It's a little confusing on the store the way it's formatted. So if you can redeem an option for Control on the store for PlayStation Plus, just redeem them all, just to be safe. But yeah, that was one that I completed. I reviewed the first DLC. I reviewed the original game and the first DLC for IGN. And then Simon, I believe, Simon Carty handled the second DLC, which I also played and really enjoyed. I feel like it's one I'm going to go back to in maybe like a year or two. It still feels like relatively fresh enough that I'm like, I might give it some more time. But I'm glad that it's there as a PS Plus one, because I do feel like, I remember when IGN gave a Game of the Year, a lot of people were like, what the hell even is Control? I've never heard of this game. any exposure there to me is always a good thing for the games that I love. And speaking of that, Concrete Genie is a first-party PlayStation game developed by Pixel Opus that also came out in 2019. That one's a really short one. I think you can beat it in like 6 or so hours. I don't know if anyone else here has spent too much time with it. If you have, feel free to shout.
You reviewed it, right?
No, I was going to, and then had a couple other projects that got in the way. But I did a preview and spoke to the devs. We do have an episode back from 2019 where we spoke with the creative director and the art director of it. It's just a really wholesome and like positive game, and has like really, at least to me, it had really sweet themes around dealing sort of with bullying as a kid, interesting themes around like what happens when the like town you grew up in starts to like fade away over time. Like how do you grapple with sort of those types of changes as well? It's definitely not like, you know, a 40-hour giant RPG like some of the other Sony first party games, but I think it still is really a really worthwhile experience to jump into, and for those who care, fun platinum. But yeah, definitely recommend that one as well, if you're a PlayStation Plus owner. But of course, the other big one is Destruction All-Stars, and whether or not we've had time with that, we can get into hands-on in a second. I was playing a little before we jumped on the call, but one of the things I wanted to talk about was we saw this last year with Fall Guys, and obviously a few years ago with Rocket League, launching a multiplayer game for free on day one of PlayStation Plus seems to be a pretty good recipe for success. I'm curious of like interest level among all of you in jumping into this game, particularly because it is a PlayStation Plus game, and how much that probably is affecting how likely you are jumping into it versus had you had to buy it at launch. Brian, I want to start with you on this one.
Yeah, I mean, my interest was pretty tepid on this one, and then just seeing it as something I could just download on my PS5 for free or as part of something I was already paying for completely changed my perception on it. And I went in with a really open attitude, and I'm really liking what I'm playing so far. It's a kind of weird sort of mix of the aesthetics of something like Rocket League with a little bit of WWE and then some, I would say, ARMS from Nintendo. Like there's like kind of over characterized personas jumping in and out of cars, and then smashing each other. And I really like the smash mechanic. It reminds me of somewhere between something like you'd find in Burnout, but also what you find in Smash Brothers, like that simple flick of the joystick to smash into another car and make it explode. You build up these charge meters. There's a lot of like sort of systems that are running in parallel that's giving it a little more depth than I was expecting. But ultimately it is a very arcade multiplayer, you know, like arena based combat game, and it's super fun. Like I was really not expecting to like this game. It's bright, it's colorful. The DualSense stuff is great. Like when your car starts to like get really beat up, you feel like your tailpipe and the back hood just rattling, and you're driving around. It's just like it's a really cool feeling. So yeah, I dig it. I'm gonna stick with it for sure. I'm having a good time with it.
Yeah, I went through the tutorial and one or two. Like there's not a full campaign, but there are like missions essentially you can do to play single player. And yeah, I felt the same. I sort of went in more with an open mind, I think, because it was like, yeah, this is free. I'm going to try it. It's for the PS5. Like you were saying, I think you nailed what the aesthetic is. It looks really good on PS5. It's running really well. But yeah, it is a there's a lot, I think, to grapple with at first, because it is the dual system of both being on foot and in the car. But yeah, when you get into the mayhem of it, and you're just trying to really land a smash into another car that's driving past you, or you can leap out of your car and jump on top of someone else's car and try to either wreck it or take it over. Mm-hmm. There's just all these little fun things you can do, and it keeps the momentum going match per match in a really fun way.
So I will say that one thing that kind of caught me off guard, and I haven't really dug into the economics of it so much yet, but the single player is sort of episodic, and the entire first episode is free, but everything after that you have to buy with points. And I'm not sure if there's really a precedent for PlayStation Plus games to have sort of paywalled content like that. It does make me, it makes me wonder, what does this look like? What would this have looked like as a boxed retail copy of the PS5 launch? Would all the content would have been included for $40 or $60 versus now where it's free, but you do have to pay for gems or whatever.
It's worth noting just on a gameplay mechanic level, because they talked about it in the state of play for anyone who may have missed it, because it was kind of buried in the PS Plus announcement. Yeah, there are two types of currencies in the game. One you earn in game. I think it's for mostly cosmetics. I don't know if it's the one that goes toward the campaign missions, but it's something you earn in game, and it's just cosmetics that don't affect the game. The other type of currency you currently only can buy. You can only purchase it right now. They're going to be introducing daily, weekly, and monthly challenges, they said, at some point in the future. I did an interview with a couple of the devs, and they said they have at least the full first year roadmap in mind. They're very focused on what's coming ahead and have a lot of content in mind. But it is a weird thing to know kind of at launch that one of the two main currencies, if I want to engage with it in that way, I just have to pay for it. And granted, I got it for part of my subscription fee. So if I start to really love the game, I may feel that's worth it. But it is a weird thing to jump in and be like, oh yeah, okay, weird I can't earn this.
And that's the thing. It's going to feel really strange a couple of months from now when this isn't a PlayStation Plus game, when that micro economy is still in there for people who are buying it as a full boxed game. That's going to be a very different proposition to, say, me playing it today.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I could also see them just flipping a Switch and making it full free-to-play, but I definitely think full price box game for this would have been a mistake, especially $70, which they would have charged for, PS5.
I know for me, for myself, I would never have bought this at full price, but knowing that I just had access to it, it's what happened with Fall Guys. Probably wouldn't have bought it, but I will definitely play it if it's here.
Mm-hmm.
I think it sets the game up for the most success, which is great, because it is a Sony first party published multiplayer game, which we don't get that often from them anymore. Mm-hmm. There is a history of car combat games at Sony, obviously the Twisted Metal, and even though this is a different franchise, this Lucid Games, the developers, have a huge background of people who made Blur and the Project Gotham Racing games, and the director of this game was on the Wipeout franchise for years. So there's a lot of history and legacy of people who are pretty good at making racing games, and car combat games are a thing we used to think of with PlayStation, but I it's something that I'm excited to get into more than I thought I would be. Mm-hmm. But I think the money question of it is going to be really interesting, and I'm curious to see when that switch is flipped and it's no longer on PS Plus, mm-hmm. how it's reception
to people. I mean, also it's nice to hear they've got a year planned out. I'm excited to see what that has going for it, because I mean, look at how Fortnite looked when it launched versus how it looked, 2 years later, or Fall Guys for that instance, or Rocket League even. I love what this game is doing mechanically, because it just feels like a complete checks party mix nonsense pile of different mechanics. It's got a little bit of Rocket League, a little bit of Fortnite. The jumping out of your car into other cars totally reminds me of what I maintain is one of the best mechanics in any video game ever, which in Sleeping Dogs, where you could lean out the side of your car and just hurl yourself onto the roof of another car and then steal it. But in this case, you have to compete with another person about whether or not they want to let you do that, or if you also just want to blow up their car. And it's got the sort of body slam thing that MotorStorm had for, as much as I yell about that stupid series.
I'll also say about this game, at least on first impressions, I'm having a lot more fun with one of the modes than the other. Mayhem, which is the default mode where you are just bashing other vehicles as much as you can to get points. Time limit, you've got unlimited lives, just keep bashing things. Having a lot more fun with that. Mm-hmm. The other free-for-all mode, Gridfall, is about trying to knock people off of platforms and you've only got a single life. And I found it a lot less fun because the optimal way to play seems to be to avoid bashing into other people, because then you risk getting bashed backwards yourself. And for a game that is so much about like chaos and carnage and collisions, it feels very strange to have the second mode you play reward staying away from the fighting.
That reminded me of the things I don't like about Rocket League paired with the things I don't like about Battle Royale games.
Yeah.
The fact that you've got the platforms dropping out from underneath you, but at the same time, you know, this is a game about driving cars around. Like, you're supposed to be moving around and colliding with stuff, and that is sort of an odd skill set to acquire. Like, I'm sure people who are good at Rocket League are probably gelling with this pretty well.
Like, I'm gelling with Mayhem mode, but for Gridfall, I found my first win I got by just standing up on one of the platforms where the cars spawn and just waiting, like, find it out for a minute.
The interesting thing is they've got on foot mechanics and they've got in the car mechanics, and not like mechanics for the car, but you know what I mean. But you can shoulder check people as you're running around on foot. It just doesn't do a lot of good because most people are trying to run over you with the car. I'm really curious to see what kind of modes they roll out. If there's like, hey, everyone's on foot here and the world is on fire. Or, I mean, I'd be pretty happy if they just put out a straight, like, here's just a race. Like, here's just
Sorry, I was just going to mention, they did say that, like, part of their roadmap will involve, like, twists on the existing modes, obviously, like, new types of modes, most likely new characters and things. So I think they said, though, like, we have all that in mind, but we are going to be very receptive to what people are gelling and not gelling with. So, yeah.
I didn't expect to enjoy the out-of-the-vehicle stuff as much as I did. The whole, you are definitely at a disadvantage, you are very vulnerable, but if you can get those resources around the map, you can get your special vehicle in, you can start having your big, powerful upgrades. There's a character, I think, called Hannah, who has a blade in the front of her car that when you activate it, it just slices cars in half. Like, I know it's probably not strategically good, but I like the idea of just, I'm going to run around on foot for a minute so I can have my fancy car.
I need to dig into the different sort of supercars, because it's weird that they present it so character-focused and that they're like, hey, here's who you're playing as, but most of the time you're going to be playing as the car. And so to have all these characters who all have, you know, hero vehicles, but not have the stats listed from the roster screen, is a very odd, that's a very odd choice.
It's an odd choice because you only have you can only really look through that character sheet when the time is ticking down and the match is about to start, and you've got to go to the character, look at the stats, get back out, which not a good time to be trying to work out what characters are good for you.
Sorry, Brian, go ahead.
No, I was just saying, I'm not as crazy about the on foot stuff in this game, but I'm glad it's there. To me, it feels like the building parts of Fortnite, which I'm bad at, but I love the rest of it enough to stick with it. But I do appreciate that. I feel like if this game sticks, you're going to see a lot of really awesome gameplay clips of people who are, you know, daisy chaining a bunch of leaps out of cars, smashing them, taking them over, jumping into the next one. There's a lot of sort of verticality and dynamic action that can happen here if somebody knows what they're doing, which I'm not at yet. I was going to say the other thing too, more than other modes, if this sticks, and I hope it does, I hope Sony goes full, you know, Mario Kart with this, where they go, hey, Kratos has a car now, and it's a boat with wheels. And, you know, here's Aloy, and she's in a big robot dinosaur car. Like, just get really dumb with it. You know, here's the hunter from Bloodborne.
Yes, in the Kinghurst carriage with the ghost horses.
Yes.
It feels so perfect for that sort of thing. And I, on the character note, I did just want to mention, I'm plugging some of the stories I wrote from the interview, but one of the things they talked about that was really interesting was and it makes me wish there is a little bit more of a look at these characters and understanding, and I'm hoping that comes sort of post-launch. But what they did was, rather than have this internal team, Lucid, I believe, is built based in the UK, and they were like, rather than you know, this UK-based developer creating all of these different people from around the world, they hired out a bunch of different artists who are predominantly in like comic books and graphic novels and other mediums other than video games, from different regions, and we're like, okay, we have this sort of character idea in mind, like this archetype, here's maybe some of the music they listen to or this personality, you go ahead and you create them, and they used work to create
that. So because now it feels like it's actually like a global competition between people from their different respective
things.
That's like, that's one of my weirdest, like, biggest hangups, is when there's too cohesive of a style guide for character design. Like the fact that like Thor and like the Asgardian armor looks a lot like the rest of the Avengers. You're like, but you're from space. That seems odd.
it's a nice twist to it. And it, again, is one of those things where like, I hope we see these characters developed further on. And Brian, just to mention, cause I know you were talking about sort of the, like the on foot comparison to it. The parkour stuff was in the game, you know, pretty much since the beginning of development, they said. But an interesting thing that they said had actually changed was originally they had levels that were much bigger and wider and taller, but they were like, they wanted it to be a multiplayer game where whether you were on foot or in a car, you were very focused on the action. And they're like, if four people are climbing up a skyscraper trying to get to a high point to jump in, they're not really part of the game anymore. And so we could see bigger environments. I wouldn't be surprised if they try some of that stuff out in the future, but at least for now they're like, they didn't want the on foot stuff to feel like you were playing a different game than when you're in the car.
And that's smart, because I think like on foot there should be that like sort of tinge in the back of your head where you feel like a squirrel crossing a highway. Like there should be a little bit of fear that like you could get hit by a truck at any given moment, although in this scenario the squirrel can jump onto the truck, steal the truck and crash it in a ditch, which is great.
There's a lot of opportunity for unexpected stuff, like you were saying, Brian. I think there's going to be some really fun, like sort of play of the game moments that are in this. That I'm once people get more of a feeling for the driving, and I'm sure it's only day one, but I'm sure they're already like expert pro players at this. I kind of can't wait to see what comes from it. But
yeah, I hope it takes off. We talk about obviously the successes like Fall Guys and Rocket League, but there's also, you know, I mean, we had the couple months ago there was Worms. The new Worms Royale, I think.
Oh yeah.
Which was cool, but it didn't click. I didn't see anybody talking about it. And then I think was it maybe the same month there was Rocket Jump?
Yeah, those were the same month.
Yeah. And I feel like neither one of those really, you know, stuck the landing. I messed around with Rocket Jump, and as opposed to being like a game that felt like it was a bunch of crazy ideas coming together with designs that felt like they were from all over, it kind of felt like it was grown in a lab from things that had sold well.
Yeah, so. It definitely can be hit or miss, but I do definitely hope it seems to be. I don't want to speak for all of you, but yeah, it definitely seems like going the PlayStation Plus route here was the right choice, and I think we're all a bit more delightfully surprised by what happened than I think we would have been, especially at launch when we're playing Miles and Demon Souls and Sackboy and the AC Valhalla on PS5 and like all these different things. Sorry,
now Lauren, now is exactly when I want to be playing it. Even if it had been on PS Plus, I probably wouldn't have cared if this had been day one.
Yep.
It needed to come just when I was feeling done with all the first party stuff.
This is a PS5 exclusive game, right?
Yes, it's just on PS5.
So, I mean, that immediately puts it in a different category than something like, you know, Rocket League, where you're dealing with the amount of PS Plus subscribers on a console that no one can buy right now. So it's like, that's already a much smaller demographic than, you know, swinging for the fences with tens of millions of readily available PS4s out in the wild. But still, hopefully this gets word of mouth and the buzz keeps going. And, you know, this becomes one of those things that people grab when they first get a PS5.
Yeah, it's a really cool one. And again, just a reminder, even if you don't have a PS5 yet, because obviously we know how tough it has been to actually find those things, definitely still redeem this game so you can download it when you do get a PS5. I do want to move on. There's a bit of news to also talk about, but I did also want to briefly mention, because it's out today as well, I haven't gotten my hands on it yet to see how it plays, but God of War got a PS5 performance patch. This was, I think, something a lot of us and a lot of players wanted day one. It wasn't there, but thankfully is now. That essentially lets you have the best of both worlds when it comes to the performance and resolution mode. So it's a new patch that should be available for download now as this episode is out, and essentially lets you have the 4K checkerboard resolution, the sort of like upscaled resolution there alongside 60 frames per second on PS5. On PS4 Pro, you still have to choose between the modes. But I'm super glad this is out. I hope we see this from other games. I don't know, you know, Ghost of Tsushima was playing a little bit better at launch. Days Gone was playing better at launch on PS5. We haven't really gotten word about like a Last of Us Part 2 patch or anything. I love that this happened. I hope we see it more, but obviously a lot of these internal teams are also working on sequels. So we'll see what happens here. But I've been holding off on a replay of this game for quite some time, hoping this would happen. And now that it has, I'm like, Sorry, other games in February. I'm probably going to replay my favorite game of 2018.
Yeah, no, same. I was like tweeting about this yesterday because this is like one of those games where I had a pretty perfect playthrough. I, you know, kind of put it down and just let it sit with me for a very long time. There are people that experience games up until they get, you know, everything. I did that with Bloodborne, you know, Ghost of Tsushima. But for a game like this, I just felt like I didn't need to sort of squeeze all of the, you know, water out of the sponge. I was happy just with one playthrough. I got to the end, the credits rolled, I was in tears, it was beautiful, and I put it down and I was like, all right, that's it. But a few years have gone by and it's, you know, more beautiful than it's ever been, and they're making a sequel, so this is a good time to jump back in.
I've heard that it makes you a better father, and I'm about to become a real father, so I figure I should play this.
It really makes you feel like God of War.
Yeah.
And the sequel is going to have to live up to even more feelings, so we'll see if it can manage that. But yeah, I definitely just wanted to mention that if you happen to have missed that news. Speaking of other PlayStation exclusives, though, not any longer, it was expected that this would have happened for this year, but MLB The Show 21 was officially announced for PlayStation and Xbox, making this, I think, the first Sony first-party game, the only one I can think of, especially in the last few generations for sure, to appear on an Xbox platform. Obviously, there have been some the other way, thanks to stuff like Minecraft and Xbox-published games going on Nintendo Switch, but this is a thing that's going to be happening going forward. MLB The Show is a franchise that can go on both Xbox and Nintendo, I believe, also sort of celebrated the announcement way back when that happened, but currently only announced for Xbox and PlayStation, so it'll be available on 420 for both generations of consoles on both sides of it. And obviously, I will say, weirdly enough, if you want to hear more about this PlayStation exclusive, probably go over to our Xbox podcast Unlocked, because Ryan McCaffrey is the biggest baseball fan I think I know on the IGN staff. And can probably speak to this a lot more, but
I'm really happy for him. That's great. Yeah. Like, he gets to play MLB The Show on his Xbox. Like, that's such a good alignment. I know we want to talk about, like, does this mean we'll see like other Sony stuff coming to other platforms? I have such a big hunch this is like an MLB call.
Yeah. This one game feels right. And I feel like, to me, part of why it feels right is just because Xbox feels like a console where people play sports games. Mm-hmm. Like, that feels like people who like sports like Xbox is my general gut hunch. And this makes sense.
My question is, what are they giving us? Like,
Minecraft, you know? They already did it.
I have both. It would be great if they were like, all right, here's a trade. You guys get the first Ori
Master
game.
Chief in Fortnite.
Yeah.
Doesn't count.
Do that on PlayStation.
Sony didn't even want that to happen.
Probably not. Yeah, I totally agree, though. I do think it is an MLB call more than anything. But yeah, Laura, as you were saying, it feels right for Xbox to have this one as well. And I think it only is going to mean more success for San Diego Studio. Like, they make really excellent baseball games year after year. They do a great job with that franchise. And so for them to only have a wider audience to now publish these games for is probably going to only mean more can be invested in that franchise, which is great for them. So it's definitely a good thing to see for the first party stable. But yeah, I don't think anyone out there should expect Horizon Forbidden West and Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart to appear on Xbox Series X. This is a like partnership thing more than a PlayStation thing, I think, very much so. I don't think that'll preclude PlayStation games coming to PC. I don't know about you all. I think we'll get some older, like in the way that we got Horizon, I think we'll see like 4 or 5 year old PlayStation games make their way occasionally to PC, but never probably day and date. Anyway, moving on from that one as well, definitely want to mention, it's a franchise I know nothing about. So if anyone on the panel wants to take it from me after I say the news, please do. Because I know obviously there are a lot of fans out there, but Mass Effect Legendary Edition finally got announced for May 14th. There won't be PS5 and Xbox Series versions exclusively available, but it will be backward compatible. We got a bunch of info about sort of the upgrades they're making. We had an interview up on IGN. You can see a few breakouts from that. And Laura, by the way, you reacted.
Yeah,
take it away.
I absolutely love the Mass Effect games, even though they are kind of hard to go back to, particularly the first one. Because, like, as great as the Mass Effect games are in terms of being really good story-driven, shooter RPGs, the first game in the series is just it has aged really, really poorly. It has incredibly slow loading times and some really janky combat, and everything just doesn't feel quite right. Like, Mass Effect 2 and 3, wonderful, amazing games that hold up much better. That's the main reason I've been excited about this Mass Effect Trilogy Remaster, is just, please bring Mass Effect 1 in line with the two games that came after it. And judging by the trailer that dropped today and some of the stuff they've been saying about the things that they're trying to get in that first game, it seems like the thing I've been hoping for is happening. They're doing a proper good revamp of the first game. They're fixing some of the things people have complained about for years, such as the incredibly long loading elevators that even on the new generation consoles still load incredibly slowly. There's some things that aren't going to be present that you would probably expect with the new generation ports. I think they talked in the press release about this, that there's not going to be ray tracing, mainly because they didn't want to remake the entire game from the ground up in the new version of Unreal to get it to support ray tracing. But like, it looks night and day improved. They've basically said, hey, do you like the gun combat from Mass Effect 2 and 3? We've made it more like that. We've gotten rid of all of the things that you don't like about Mass Effect 1's combat. Just sped the whole thing up a bit, which, whenever I recommend Mass Effect to people, I have to do it with the caveat of, the first game's a bit rough, but get through it. I'm just happy to be able to not have to have that caveat anymore.
Yeah, now you can just talk about the ending of the third one, right?
I'm in that. I'm in that small group of people who actually really likes the ending of Mass Effect 3, I know.
All I know is that people were outraged about it. I do not know what happened, so I'm sure someone will tweet at me now and spoil it. But I'm very excited to go on this journey for the first time. It's sort of one of those things where once the rumor started to pick up, I had been seriously considering a playthrough, but it's like, I'll just wait for this. And it's so funny to just see the reception to this and how happy both fans and newcomers are that this is finally happening. And to think back a few years ago when EA was like, we'll never do remasters. People don't want that. It's not worth the time and effort. Like, that's not a thing we need to do. And it's like, just look at how much people care about this Legendary Edition
collection. But hey, when is EA never not known what people want from things?
It's never happened before.
I never played the first one, and again, I think it was,
yeah.
Like, I've always heard it's kind of rough to go back to.
The first one has a wonderful story, but like, it's a bit painful to actually play.
Yeah. So this is good news. Also, I mean, it's been long enough that I don't remember what happens much. Yeah. I mean, I remember the ending, but I jumped into 2 and I picked it up from there, and I jumped in 3, and then like Ashley showed up, and I was like, who the hell are you? Like,
oh, the space racist.
Yes. Yes, she is the space racist. I figured that out along the way, but it was also just like, I think I answered like one of those, it was before you could like properly carry your save over between two games. Mm. And it did that sort of Witcher thing where you're like, what did you do last time? Do you remember this? What did you choose for this? And most of my characters showed up and they were kind of who I remembered. But then like, there just this one woman who I didn't know from the first one was there. And I was like, this is bizarre for me.
My favorite silly detail about this Mass Effect remaster is that they have unified the character creator across all three games, so that my Commander Shepard will no longer look like three separate people through the trilogy.
it's a nice thing to have actually continuity when you're supposed to.
Exactly. It's the little things that make me happy.
Exactly. But yeah, there's a ton of coverage up on IGN about sort of what has been changed, some of the things that haven't been changed, some of the decisions behind that. We have a preview impressions. I believe it was hands off, but preview impressions from Cap Bailey on IGN as well. So you can go check that out too. But yeah, it's a really exciting thing to have. I think there were rumors that the release date was originally going to be March, so we'll have to wait a little longer than some of us may have anticipated. But the beginning half of this year is still looking a little quiet. So this will, I think, be a really nice, very big trilogy to be able to explore. And EA, if you're actually listening to reason now, You're making a new skate, you release the Mass Effect remasters, please just do the same with Dead Space. I just want to replay Dead Space 1. I love it so much. Anyway, before we move on to what we've been playing, just briefly wanted to mention a very funny PSVR patent that caught me off guard, that and I just said guard very strangely, that I thought was just really, really funny and kind of reminded me weirdly of the Wii U. And I'll get to that comparison in a second. But essentially, there's a PlayStation patent for technology that lets spectators mess with you in VR. So this is, of course, this doesn't mean this will actually happen, but the patent was filed in October 2020. And essentially, the copy talks about audience members will be able to participate in games while another person is in VR. The spectators will be able to make decisions via spectator devices, so probably phones. And they use the example basically of the people watching being able to choose what the person is going to use as a weapon. And so you could choose or what they're going to be able to pick up. And so it's things like a sword or have like a monster helper or a soup ladle. And obviously you would choose the soup ladle because you're messing with your friends. But this sort of seems like a marriage to me of the Playlink games that we've gotten, like That's You and a couple of the others, with VR, and also just sort of the Wii U comparison was like Nintendo Land and the games that were like sort of 1v4, where it's like someone is using the Wii U gamepad to be looking at something specifically while the other people are playing with the game in a different way. And that seems like a really cool use of VR that PlayStation hasn't really gotten into before. Again, PSVR still will always kind of be this niche within the wider PlayStation base, but I think that's a really cool addition to what we've seen from PSVR games so far.
It reminds me of, I believe Warhammer Vermintide 2 is one of these games that does this with Twitch, where you can have people in the Twitch chat vote on what's going to happen in-game while you're playing. And, I mean, it's always fun to screw up the person who's trying to play their video game, so I would be very excited to see more of this.
This exactly. Sounds great. One of my favorite VR games or VR experiences is playing Keep Talking and Nobody Explodes, the way it's meant to be played, with a full binder full of, like, bomb instructions. And like, I mean, if you haven't played it, the whole thing is one person is basically in VR trying to disarm a bomb and the other person has your bomb disposal manual, and so you're basically describing what you see in VR and you're like, I've got two red wires, and the person's like, is there a vacuum tube, is there an on switch, is there a keyhole, and like you have to basically, you know, you have to keep talking and nobody explodes, and this feels very much in line with that, but with more sort of, you know, video gaminess. But I would love to play, you know, a game where my friends make me hold a soup ladle in VR. That sounds like a good one.
Anything that makes the VR experience less of a solitary experience, I really enjoy.
Totally. Yeah. And that feels like something there are obviously a few teams within Sony, whether it's London Studio behind Blood and Truth or a lot of the Sony Japan teams, the team Asobi working on Astrobot and some other teams in there. There's obviously a lot of VR experience in-house, and I hope they could come up with some really clever party games. It feels like Astrobot would be like tailor-made for something like this. Like, they could easily do an Astro's party sort of thing. But yeah, again, just sort of the long continuing mystery of what comes next with PSVR, while we still have to deal with all of the wires and dongles and attachments to be able to play PSVR, either on PS4 or PS5. But speaking of, there are still PSVR games coming out, including a new PSVR exclusive coming this spring called Winds and Leaves, which was on the PlayStation blog today as we're recording, and just wanted to give it a shout out. It's a very, very cool, called a contemplative non-linear sim where you can cultivate your inner gardener, and it just seems very peaceful and wonderful. So go check out that trailer if you haven't seen it. But other than that, I wanted to briefly just catch up on what we've been playing. Laura, I know we talked a little bit about Control and Destruction All-Stars already, but have you been playing anything else in the world of PlayStation you want to give a shout out?
The only other thing I've been playing in the world of PlayStation this week, and I'm a little late to the party because I think you talked about it last week, was the Resident Evil Village demo that went up last week. And I mean, I've never seen a thing that looks so visually well. I want to call it gorgeous, but it's not. It's disgusting and terrifying and horrifying. such horrible use of amazing visuals. As much as there is no real sense of like the combat or anything, I think we can probably just from having played Resident Evil 7 get a pretty good guess how that's going to go. But I'm a big sucker for big mansion environments in Resident Evil games. As much as I liked the house in Resident Evil 7, I want somewhere that feels a bit bigger, a bit more sprawling. I like the fact that this, like, obviously the full game is going to be a bit more like out and sprawling in the rest of the world, but it was nice to feel like I was in a classic Resident Evil mansion setup again. And also, tall lady's very good.
That is probably the best summation of both the demo and probably the full game when we get to it in a few months. Max, anything you've been playing that you want to shout out before we
I'm so completely enamored with Hitman. I love it so much. Like, it's I've kept chipping away at it, and like, it's just like, it's like, I don't know. I feel so dumb for not having jumped on it sooner, but I'm also same. Like, there's such a wonderful wealth of stuff to play with, and I've been playing a little bit of one and a little bit of three, and I told myself I wouldn't spend money on two until I like earned the right. Like, I have to really, you know, I have to get enough lock picks and special gizmos and different types of poison crossbows or whatever. So God, I love that game.
I've been the same. I feel very silly for not having picked it up before, but I'm glad that it allows me to play the first two as well.
Having played the first two, I've been saving Hitman 3 specifically for when I've got a bit of time that I know I won't need to play anything else for work, because I just want to get really stuck into it if I play it.
Yeah.
I ruined a marriage. It was amazing.
In the game?
Yes. I mean, in real life a few times, but you know, it's these things happen.
And Brian, what about you? Anything you've been playing?
I fell down like a weirdly specific rabbit hole recently where I wanted to play my next gen console games in handheld form the way Christopher Nolan wanted them to be played. So I got a Razer Kishi and a like dirt cheap Android phone off Craigslist, and basically like kitbashed a handheld that can play PS5 and Xbox Series X on it. So I've been playing a bunch of PS5 games through the Kishi in handheld mode through remote play. And the thing is, through remote play, the official app doesn't recognize the Kishi as like a Bluetooth controller. But this guy, like one dude, made an app called PS Play that works better than the $1 billion, you know, tech company got to do. And so shout out to that guy. And so like, you just plug it in and immediately it just starts working. You connect to your PS5 or PS4 and you can play PlayStation games on the couch while you're watching a movie or something. I'm on like fiber internet in my house, so that's probably doing a lot of heavy lifting, but I feel like if you're close enough to your modem, like, I don't think it would work super great, like, you know, out in the wild or anything like that. Maybe it does, but yeah, it's just been really fun because I was like playing Bloodborne with an Xbox themed third party Razer controller on an unlocked Android phone through a bootleg like individually developed PlayStation app, and it was like a handheld Bloodborne. It was cool. It's fun to be able to do that. So I don't know if you're home a lot and your significant others are using the TV. I don't know why I suggested that you have several significant others, but maybe you do. Maybe you do. All the more reason to figure out remote play and play at home. You can also get like a $10 clip or $15 clip for your PlayStation phone or PlayStation controller and play like that.
I bought one of those clips and they definitely work, but your controller definitely ends up a bit more top heavy.
Yes. Oh, good. You got one too, Max. Yeah.
I haven't messed with it yet. I also realized I broke my phone. You know, like, I just stopped putting a case on it because I never leave the house. And I went outside of the house and I saw more crows than I'd ever seen in one tree. And I got so excited, I just dropped the phone and cracked the corner of it. So
did you throw your phone at them?
No, I was like, I got to get a picture of this. And I pulled that out of my pocket and just dropped it on the concrete.
It's like Bloodborne in real life. I need a photo. And then we just dropped it. Yeah, it happens. Well, hopefully people are, you know, in their homes. So if you need that sort of attachment, hopefully you're able to find one of those. But before we wrap up, I also want to do a memory card, which is, of course, our weekly segment where we, you, the listeners and viewers at home, write in with your funny, weird, sad, happy, wacky, whatever memories of your PlayStation life, and we read them on the show. This week, though, we have actually a very interesting one from Laura. So I thought
Yeah, so I was thinking about PlayStation stories I might want to share, and the one that like jumped to mind for me is I had a very weird week or two around the announcement of that slim PS4 redesign a few years ago. So for anyone who doesn't remember, there was a weird situation in the UK where slim PS4s started showing up on like bootleg sales sites a couple of weeks before it got announced, and like A couple of outlets had like gotten their hands on one. I think Eurogamer had one, and they took the video down after like 15 minutes. And I made some very not necessarily good choices. I met some sketchy people in some back alleys. Turning up with cash, which is always a bad idea when you go to meet strangers you found off the internet. But I managed to get my hands on a PS4 Slim like 2 weeks before it was announced, and I was in this weird situation because, like, I hadn't signed anything to say I couldn't talk about it, which is usually the case when we get stuff ahead of launch. And I did a video, and I was just like, here it is. I unboxed it. Here it is plugged in. Here's the controller. I had 2 weeks of people telling me that I'd, like, the conspiracy theories were very strange. The most common conspiracy theory was I 3D printed a shell and plugged my HDMI cable into, like, an extender that was in this 3D printed shell and was, like, trailing an HDMI cable to just a PS4 under my table. So it was a very weird couple of weeks of, like, is Sony gonna come shout at me? No one believes this exists, and the Sony ninjas might show up at any moment. And it was very nice to just breathe a sigh of relief when they said, yes, there's a Slim PS4. It was very weird.
Yeah. That's so crazy that I wish you had screen capped all the conspiracy theories and been like, now what?
Oh yeah, no, I did. I had screenshots when it happened. Under that video, the most upvoted comments are people going, so how'd that 3D printing turn out?
Well, it's, you did so well at it that your house turned into a mass production 3D studio.
Exactly. Sony never had anything to do with it. I made all of them. That's my deep secret I'm admitting here today.
Finally, the truth comes out. It's so funny to me that people would think it's not real, if only because that's a thing that PlayStation does every generation. They redesign, they do Slims.
Exactly, and it's not like I was the only person that had one. Like, there were people who were just buying them on the internet.
Yeah. Also, of all the things to, like, fake come up with, that's really where, like, someone would go, no, you would say you had, like, the Vita 2 or something ridiculous.
Yeah. The big thing people kept saying was when you booted the Slim up before it had a system update, it just showed the regular PS4 on the TV because PS4 firmware only knew to show you that. And they were like, it's showing a regular PS4. This is a fake. It was very weird week.
It's so strange, but thank you so much for sharing that story. I do remember actually seeing that unboxing, and I think I saw some of the, like, scuttlebutt around it of people being like, is it real? Is it not? And it's like, no, it was real.
it was the first thing I ever had on YouTube that went trending, and I was, like, apparently I was being put into people's subscription boxes who weren't subscribed to me, and that got some people pissed off.
That is the weird part about YouTube where, yeah, it'll just show you people's content you've never heard of, and then it's like, how did that happen? But that is such a weird, wonderful story. Thank you for sharing it here. I absolutely adore that happened. It sucks that people accused you of not telling the truth about a Slim console, but that's the internet sometimes.
That's the internet.
But anyway, thank you so much for sharing that story. We have a bunch to read in the coming weeks, but if you still want to share your story as well, please write in to beyond@ign.com with the subject line memory card, and we'll be sure to read them on the show. Before we wrap up briefly, I wanted to mention, Laura, of course, we talked about your book that's coming out this week that everyone should definitely go out and purchase if you have somehow forgotten the name of it. It's Things I Learned from Mario's Butt. Available this week. Please go check it out. Not only does it have excerpts from these two wonderful gentlemen I do the show with every week, but you have people from all around the games industry contributing to it, correct, Laura?
It's got Tetris's
butt, yeah. There's a bunch of other people from the internet. There's who's in there? There's Ashens, there's some of the kind of funny people like Greg Miller and Tim Gettys. There's one of the McElroys. I'm completely blanking on who's in this book now.
Alana Pierce is in there.
Oh, yeah, Alana Pierce is in there.
Yeah, yeah. People who've been on this show before, if you're a longtime listener, go read their weird literotica, I guess.
Go read their butt stuff.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's the title of the show, I guess. Go read some butt stuff. In addition to that, though, Laura, anything else that you want to point people to?
Yeah, I would love it if people checked out my YouTube, where every Friday on YouTube at Laura K Buzz, I upload episodes of a series called Access Ability, all about accessibility in the games industry and how we can make games more accessible for more people. We've got a video going up this week with Jim Sterling talking about ADHD in video games. And other than that, Twitch as well. I Twitch stream Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays, so check that out. Laura K. Buzz there as well.
Awesome. And you also, speaking of just bringing it into the IGN fold more, you also helped with a piece from our own Joshua Yale as well.
Yes, there's a wonderful piece by Joshua Yale that went up this week about Harry Potter, and I've completely misplaced the title of the piece. Where is it?
I will grab it. Typing.
I should know this. I've looked at it enough.
I know. I read it all yesterday. How Harry Potter fans are coping with J.K. Rowling.
Yep. I helped with sensitivity reading and that sort of stuff on that piece. I'm really happy with how it turned out. It's a really wonderful piece. You should go read it.
Yeah, nice work on that.
Yeah. Very, very happy and proud to have that article up on IGN. Thank you for your help with it as well. And yeah.
I'm glad it finally went up. It's been in the works for a while.
Yeah.
I like that it's phrased like J.K. Rowling is some sort of natural disaster.
I mean
a little bit.
Pretty much.
Anyway, anything else, Brian, that you want to shout out people toward?
No, go check out that butt book.
Check out
I want you all to read my Bloodborne thing in the butt book because I'm very proud of it.
Buttborn.
And Max, I definitely know, of course, you have an excerpt in the butt book as well, but you also have a new series out on IGN that the second episode of just went up.
Yeah. It's a monthly series, so it's hard to consistently promote it, but it's called Reviews and Review, and it's basically like a little sort of bite-sized speed run of all the reviews that IGN put up over the last month. I did one for December as well, but put it up right before Christmas break, and it kind of got lost in the shuffle. And I also do the monthly What's Coming Out Next Month, which is sort of the same video in a different direction. And I totally had my teleprompter crooked in that video. And so everyone was making fun of me looking off camera or looking like I'm reading terrorist demands on the news. So
I did love in the latest episode of Reviews and Review your shout out to Brendan Graber and Mitchell Saltzman, both two very, very good at games people on the IGN staff who are good at games in some similar ways, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people see that like IGN will review a game, but it's like IGN is not one person. IGN is a bunch of people, and that, you know, it's to sort
it's
of
five try people. To, everyone
it's
knows that.
Upwards of five people, unless, you know, yeah, unless we have to fire one of them or whatever, you know. Yeah,
someone's sick for a week. Yeah. But other than that, yeah, just also wanted to mention, I know I shout it out earlier, but please go check out the interview excerpts. We'll have a couple more coming out soon from my Destruction All-Stars dev interview if you're interested in learning more about that game. Also, before we wrap up, just wanted to mention we've been trying to do this more, but Laura, I want to ask, anything that you've watched or listened or read recently that you want to give a shout out as well that you've really enjoyed?
Give a quick shout out to something I've been watching on Netflix called Sweet Home. It is a single series that's currently up. It is a Korean, but sort of overdubbed into English. It's sort of a B-movie horror with a little bit of comedy in it, about a bunch of people trapped in an apartment complex in a sort of end-of-the-world horror scenario. I didn't expect to find it as amusing as I did. Their creature designs are fascinating, and yeah, it's just if you're looking for just some like very inventive if a bit low budget horror, it's really worth a watch.
Awesome. There's no shortage of horror fans on this show, so that is definitely good to know. I had not heard of that one. Brian or Max, anything that you guys have been watching or listening to you want to shout out?
Speaking of horror, I watched one of the most deeply unsettling movies I've ever seen recently. It's called Threads. It's on Shudder. It's from 1984, and it's basically about a peaceful small town that gets bombed and everything just goes horrible. It's shot very sort of documentary style. It feels incredibly real, and it will haunt me for weeks, and I have pretty thick skin for this kind of stuff. I also watched a movie called Saint Maud, which I've been trying to see for like a year and a half, and it kicks ass, and ooh, you'll be able to watch it very soon. It's really, really good.
I can't wait to see that. I watched, what's it called? Psycho Goreman, PG for short. Mm-hmm. And it's on Shudder. It's also, you can rent it on Amazon or whatever, but I don't even know how to describe it. It feels like a direct-to-video Disney movie, like live action from the 90s, or an episode of Power Rangers, except with the most like M-rated special effects These two children wind up basically becoming like in control of just a super powerful like space warlord, and then they have to like, for some reason, like dress him up like Alan Grant from Jurassic Park, and it's just it's a real beautiful mess. I love it.
I think I saw the review of it up on IGN, had no idea what I was looking at, and I was like, I think that kind of looks like the ooze guy from the Power Rangers movie, whose name I'm blanking on.
It's got some Ivanhoe's energy for sure.
Thank you.
Ivanhoe's. But then it'll occasionally just like totally turn the knob up all the way for like just full blown like disgusting horror, and it's just like, oh, okay, we're doing that now. All right.
Awesome. Well, I'll have to check all of these things out because I've just been pretty much playing what we've been talking about. Of course, I'll just recommend classic indie film The Godfather if you need something new to watch. But other than that, thank you all so much for joining me for this episode. And thank you to everyone out there listening and watching. And thank you, Laura, for joining us this week. Had a blast on this episode. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. And just as a reminder for everyone, Things I Learned from Mario's Butt is out this week. So go check it out if you can. But otherwise, you can find us here every Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific at beyond.ign.com, youtube.com/IGNBeyond, and your favorite podcast services around the world. Thank you so much for listening and watching. And as always, beyond.
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 Hey there, it's Rachel Ballinger, and I am extremely excited to invite you to Rachel Uncensored. It's my podcast where I sit down and get real with my friends and celebrity guests, where we talk about all sorts of topics. And sometimes we might be under the influence when we do so. We cover things from personal stories to hot button issues. And it's the only place on the internet you can find an uncensored version of me. It's a side of me that you might not have seen before because it's not the most family or brand friendly. But don't worry, I'm still sort of slightly a decent human being. If you're intrigued, then make sure you check it out. New episodes drop every Wednesday. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Trust me, you won't want to miss out on the fun and candid conversations we have here on Rachel Uncensored.